If you subscribe to Topcast prior to August 2015, you might need to update your subscription. Please visit topcast.online.ucf.edu to resubscribe so that you continue receiving new episodes.
From the University of Central Florida's Center for Distributed Learning, I'm Tom Cavanaugh.
And I'm Kelvin Thompson.
And welcome again to the Teaching Online podcast, known to his friends and family as the Topcast. So, Kelvin.
So, Tom.
Can we get personal?
I don't know. How personal do you want to get?
How personal? Well, that's a good question, because we're going to talk a bit about personalization today in higher education. So is that personal enough?
That's okay. I can deal with that.
We won't have to be calling HR about this.
I hope. Again.
That's right. So personalization, it's something that I've been thinking a lot about, and it actually leads directly into the question that we always ask, which is,
what's that?
What's in the thermos?
Oh, what's in the thermos? Well, I didn't bring the thermos today, Tom.
What?
Yeah, I know. Look at this. I brought in my personal brewing system.
Oh, now I see it.
From home. Look at that. And so in the spirit of our topic today, I want to offer you
these
various little pods. You can make your own choice about what you might like to drink approximately 4 minutes from now.
All right. So can I say the brands, do you think? Does it matter?
I don't know. You can say something. Yeah. Let me pour the water in here.
How about this one? Named after a borough of the great city of New York.
Brooklyn. There it is. Yeah.
It says forget about it.
It does say
bottom.
Forget about it. I tried that. I didn't like it, but you might like it, so that's good.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I'm drinking one named after a famous Hollywood actor.
Okay.
Newman's Own.
So why are we each picking our own coffees today?
Well, so this way, I thought it would kind of reinforce what you said, personalization, mm-hmm. right? So we both have some coffee. We got, you know, but here, you can have what you like. I can have what I like. But we can both sit here and you don't have to just kind of deal with whatever I pour out of the thermos.
Okay.
Like all the other days.
And if I could just stretch this metaphor to the breaking point.
Sure.
We're both drinking different coffees.
Mm-hmm.
However, they're both being delivered
Ooh.
By the same system.
Delivery system. Got it. Mm.
So if we could translate that a little more explicitly to the higher education environment, let's think about today's changing student population. I think it's pretty obvious to everybody who works in higher education that today's student is becoming more and more diverse in every sense of that word. We're not just talking about ethnic and gender diversity, although certainly that's true, but socioeconomic status, mm-hmm. Traditional versus non-traditional learners,
right.
People who have a lot more mobility requirements in their jobs if they travel or something like that.
First generation.
Absolutely.
First time in college versus transfers.
Yep, transfers. You name it, there's a way to slice and dice the diversity of higher education. And they each need something different from the schools where they are, they're accessing education.
No, you will take what we have and you will like it.
That's the way it used to be, and we all know it.
Are you kidding?
Maybe in some places still is. I grabbed a couple of stats that I thought were actually kind of telling. One was that 28% of all undergraduate students, so when you think undergraduate students, you think 18 to 24 years old, living in a dorm perhaps.
Right.
But 28% of all undergraduate students today are raising dependent children.
Hmm.
So the non-traditional student, I can hear our coffee Ooh, brewing.
Nice.
That is my personalized coffee.
That's nice.
So
fresh for you.
The non-traditional student is the majority of undergraduates today.
I don't think people buy that, do you? I mean, you know what I mean? Just sort of at an emotional level, we still like to kind of believe that, oh, college. 18 to 24, there it is.
Well, it's reinforced by media and movies and TV shows and things like that. But the reality is that there are an awful lot of working parents out there. Hope that's not too distracting. There are an awful lot of working parents out there who are going to college and who are not living in the frat house and having the traditional experience. And so one more stat. 71% of all of those student parents are women.
Hmm.
There are more women in higher education now than there are men. So how do we serve all of these different kinds of students, these different constituencies who all have different needs with a single educational enterprise is the challenge of the day.
Do we have to?
Well, if you're one of those students, I would hope so. And that brings to mind this term that I've heard over and over again, the disaggregation of higher education. Famously, people like Paul LeBlanc and Clayton Christensen have talked about this. And LeBlanc's institution, Southern New Hampshire University, I think is probably the single best example of this in higher ed. So what do I mean by that?
What do you mean by that?
They have a traditional liberal arts campus, right?
Right.
In New Hampshire. And 18 to 24-year-olds attend that and go to class and participate in intercollegiate athletics and live in the dorm. And they get that experience from Southern New Hampshire. However, there's a whole giant online population all over the world who take classes, who have completely different life experiences, different expectations, a whole different demographic of non-traditional student who accesses the same Southern New Hampshire institution, but completely differently online. And then they now have the College for America competency-based program that serves a completely different population in a completely different way. Each of them are accessing the same institution, but the institution has disaggregated its services to try and serve them all in ways that best meet their needs.
I mean, that's cool. You know, I heard Paul LeBlanc once talk about some of this, and he was saying how their work with efficiencies in getting through, he wasn't even talking about College for America, but their work on efficiencies in students being able to get through their curriculum more quickly led some to finishing their undergraduate degree fast, 3 years. And there was some pushback from the students because they were getting done so fast. They felt like they were kind of cheated out of the experience. And so he was talking about, if I understood it correctly, he was talking about, well, hey, let's market that a little bit differently. And now let's get your bachelor's and your master's, but you can get, kind of combo deal for the same amount of time commitment as you normally would have gotten a quote-unquote four-year degree.
Right, yeah. And in fact, he spoke at a conference I was at shortly after they launched College for America, and he was kind of announcing the first graduate that they had who completed his associate's degree in 3 months. And, you know, that's competency-based. It's a little different than what you just described. But that was a student who was motivated and was able to do the work and had a completely different experience of Southern New Hampshire than somebody who's living on campus, living in the dorms. I like to use the metaphor of the fable of the elephant and the three blind men that are told to feel the elephant and describe it, and they each feel a different part of the elephant, and one describes it as a snake or another one.
Oh, an elephant is like a tree trunk.
Right, exactly.
An elephant is like a vine.
Right, and of course, they're all right, but they're all wrong. The elephant is the institution, and they're serving each of those different describers in different ways.
This all sounds good.
Yeah.
Why don't we just do that?
We should. So how, right?
How?
Well, there are a number of things that are happening now, and I made a few little notes here to kind of throw out there, all under this larger umbrella of personalization in higher ed. I'll run through them maybe a little kind of as a list, and then we can dive into some of them if you want.
Sure.
Adaptive learning, which is happening now. Learning analytics, which allows us to see specifically what's happening with individual students. Competency-based education, we just mentioned.
Right.
Prior learning assessment. Something that's been a big initiative, particularly in the Gates Foundation, integrated planning and advising systems. And then this rise of student success coaches, which is more of a low-tech, high-touch kind of approach, but the whole idea is to individualize support for students. So are there any of those that strike your fancy you want to dive into?
Yeah. We don't want to go too far down this road, but some of these sound kind of like they overlap.
Yeah.
Right. So especially like adaptive learning and competency-based education, but isn't prior learning assessment a part of competency-based education? And you know, there's so much there. We might even talk about that another time. But some of that, how do you disentangle that? Speaking of disaggregation,
yeah, it's a good question. I mean, definitely the first two I mentioned, adaptive learning and learning analytics, I think definitely overlap because it's the promise of adaptive learning is leveraging big data behind the scenes mm-hmm. to serve up a personal experience, a personalized experience for each individual student. And it's only through analytics that you can really realize that kind of promise. So a lot of these, I think, are dependent upon each other. A student success coach might use an integrated planning and advising system mm-hmm. for a particular student. Prior learning assessment would definitely be a component of a competency-based program, or it certainly can be a component of a competency-based program. So I agree. I don't think that each of these stands alone necessarily, or you can't. All right, I'll pick that one, but that mm-hmm. means I can't do that one. In many cases, they cannot be separated. They're dependent upon each other.
You know, another thing that comes to mind as you say that is, I'm sure nobody listening to us would fall into this category, but it seems like that sometimes people latch onto any one of those concepts, those terms, and they sort of think it's going to be a silver bullet, a panacea of some sort. You know, just that if we just can nail down analytics, it's going to solve all of our problems.
Yeah. Well, I agree. None of these is a panacea, and even something as promising as competency-based education, it's really targeted at a particular kind of student. It's not for everyone. It's for the one blind guy feeling one part of the elephant, but the other two people need something different from the institution.
Right.
So trying to target competency-based education at an 18-year-old high school graduate who doesn't have the kind of work or life experience where they could demonstrate competency in something is probably not a great investment.
Right.
But if you're trying to serve students who have life experience and can demonstrate that or be able to progress more quickly, then maybe that does make some sense.
Now that's good. You invoked Clayton Christensen earlier. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he talks about the job to be done.
Right.
So as an institution, what is the job to be done?
Why don't you describe that for a second for somebody who's not familiar with
it? I don't even know. I just cite this stuff. I read the back flap of books. I don't actually read books. Are you kidding? That's about as far as I understand it. And, you know, hey, maybe I've got it wrong because it wouldn't be the first time. So, you know, instead of just being, oh, here's the thing we need to do, it's, well, why? Why is it you want to do that? I've heard, I don't know if it was Christensen or one of his devotees, but someone said once, people don't buy electric drills, they buy holes. You know, you need a hole to put a screw in. It's just the drill as a means to an end.
Right.
So keep your eye on the prize. What is it that you're... So as an institution, is there one job, one sector that you're going to serve really, really, really well? Or are there maybe two or three... You described Southern New Hampshire University having maybe two, three, four mm-hmm. Things that they in different ways are serving. But you can't be everything to everybody, you know, being selective. I don't know. That's my take of the jobs to be done. Is that anywhere close to what you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I've also heard Christensen talk about that, and he talked about the milkshake, and they did the study of
now
people.
I'm hungry.
Well, we're drinking coffee.
I know.
The people who stopped by the fast food restaurant on the way to work in the morning, and then the company had hired Christensen to consult to figure out how to upsell or sell more milkshakes. And rather than come up with promotions or something, they figured out that people were buying the milkshake as a meal replacement.
Hmm.
And when they marketed it differently, they were able to sell more milkshakes. And the job to be done was to be a meal replacement, not to be a milkshake necessarily. And trying to understand the objective behind why somebody is coming to school. So someone may come to school to get an education and be a better citizen. Somebody else might come to say, I want to be a lawyer.
Right.
Or I want to be an engineer.
Or I want to make more money.
Yeah. I want a promotion or something. Yeah. Or I want to switch my career. Mm-hmm. I want to improve my lot. I want to make more money, whatever. They're hiring the institution for a job to be done, as you said.
Yeah. It occurs to me also that there's a lot of ways that, I mean, this personalization, it's not a big thing. You know, I came out of the K-12 setting years and years ago, and we would talk a lot about individualized instruction, right? There's realizing that they're even in a particular classroom, even though we group people by age cohorts and all that, that, you know, how can you meet the needs of this particular student or this particular subgrouping of students? But to do that at scale mm-hmm. is challenging. And I guess another higher education precedent is the Oxford-Cambridge right. You know, tutorial kind of model, sitting around the table, the, you know, books and discussion. But again,
nothing's more personal than sitting one-on-one with your professor.
No, right? Exactly. Well, some, yeah. Anyway, some maybe more than others, but that doesn't scale all that well, does it? So the things that you've talked about, I noticed all had a technology as a connector. So that there's some kind of technological dimension to all of those, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, I think, another important point to make, that, as you said, personalization in education isn't new. Definitely that Oxford-Cambridge tutor model is personalization. However, technology is enabling us to scale personalization in a way that we've never previously seen. It's sort of unprecedented now. Mm-hmm. The ability to leverage learning analytics across an entire institution and know the individual progress challenges of an individual student out of, like in our case, 61,000 students. It's mm-hmm. pretty remarkable mm-hmm. to be able to do that. And I think we've only scratched the surface on the capabilities there. So technology is allowing us to scale personalization in a way that's never before been possible.
I think it's kind of cool. And I guess really the implicit assumption is that there's an overt emphasis on students succeeding no matter what their sector is. And that's kind of a cool thing.
Yeah, I think that in the past, at some schools, not all, at the university level, like where we work, it's probably more pervasive where, you know, you want to weed out the unworthy at mm-hmm. one point.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that page is completely turned. I yeah. think that now it's all about student success, and there's a lot we could learn from folks like community colleges
sure.
that are always about student success. So how do we help the students succeed, give them the tools, resources, information, something like Purdue Signals, where they mm-hmm, expose mm-hmm. the student's risk level in three different colors to the student.
Yeah.
So the student knows, oh gosh, I'm yellow. Mm-hmm. maybe I should do something about that. Is really beneficial and different from the way students were approached in the past to just kind of weed them out.
Yeah, I think that's right. And at the same time, I can imagine colleagues who wouldn't disagree with that, wouldn't disagree with the emphasis on positive outcomes from a college education, but might chafe a little bit at the degree to which we're talking about success and this personalization mm-hmm. and each sector kind of have its own little pathway and all. I can kind of imagine, you know, this thing, well, hand-holding. You know, yeah. That's just hand-holding. I don't have time to hand-hold students, and that's not what college is supposed to be about. I mean, there's got to be personal responsibility and critical thinking, and they've got to rise to the occasion. And I don't know. What do you do with that?
Well, it's a good question, and I think I know why you're asking it, because I've been challenged by faculty with this. So, for example, we demonstrated recently the adaptive learning system that we're using here to some faculty. And one of those faculty was very skeptical of it, even though it was other faculty that was presenting it. And his point was, and I think he might have a valid point here, that what if part of your pedagogical objective is to challenge the student to think in new ways, to stretch mm-hmm. and to approach problems differently than they might be, that they might prefer to approach that problem. And an adaptive system that accommodates itself to the learner's preference in learning style, so that if you prefer video, you're going to see a video instead of text. Well, maybe that's antithetical to the secondary objective to learning the content, which is to stretch yourself to learn new ways of doing things. Okay, if that is the goal and you're trying to accomplish that kind of an objective, then perhaps adaptive learning isn't the best strategy for you to use. Those are really interesting, deep conversations mm-hmm. that you can have. But not everybody is going after that kind of an objective.
Right.
You know, right. In many cases, we want them to learn the content and mm-hmm. we want them to succeed and mm-hmm. to have that sense of confidence. Maybe really high achieving students, and you want to stretch them a little, but it's all contextual. Mm-hmm. It depends, right? Isn't that the answer to everything?
That's pretty much my answer to to everything. So I guess as we approach the bottom of the cup here, mine's about done. You didn't drink any of yours. You didn't like it, did
no,
you?
No, I'm half done. Oh, it's okay, awesome. Right. I was trying not to be loud
Slurpee.
In my drinking.
Yeah, I just slurp anyway. I guess, you know, what occurs to me is we've talked about this, that I don't know if this puts too fine a point on it, but personalization is about relevance to today's diverse, disaggregated students, and institutions who don't grapple with the question of how to better serve one or more distinct groups run the risk of de facto becoming irrelevant and then students going elsewhere for an education. Is that putting too fine a point on it?
Well, I make that argument. I do think there's some truth to it. And of course, there are different levels to personalization. So there's the big aggregate, like what Southern New Hampshire's doing. But then there's sort of the in-class individual student that learning analytics or adaptive can do. I think the more micro approaches are applicable broadly. Mm-hmm. The larger strategic question of what kind of an institution do we want to be, mm-hmm. well, there might be legitimate strategic reasons for saying, no, we're not going to serve that kind of because we are this. Mm-hmm. You know, we are a liberal arts, faith-based university or college, and that's what we're going to be, and that's our value proposition. And that's, I think, very legitimate. And if you don't fit that mold, then that might not be the institution for you. But mm-hmm. within that, why not do all you can to help your students succeed? Mm-hmm. And personalization, I think, is a way to get that. So maybe one way to kind of wrap this up is to just kind of say that I think, I don't know if you agree, Kelvin, mm-hmm. that as the technology improves, mm-hmm. not only is it allowing us to scale, but it's going to provide better data, more effective interventions, enhanced engagement for students. Basically, as the technology improves, this whole approach to personalization is going to improve. And hopefully it's going to result in student success and more students being able to access and succeed in higher ed.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I tend to agree with you. And I hope that if you're listening to this and you disagree, I hope you let us know politely. and you know, we can have an ongoing dialogue. But of course, if you agree with us, feel free to let us know that.
Yeah, we love
as
people
well.
Who agree with us. Well, until next time, for the Center for Distributed Learning's TopCast, I'm Tom.
I'm Kelvin.
See ya.